I want to start with what I feel like is a much more important story, and that is the continuing non-impeachment and what basically Nancy Pelosi admits to in that soundbite. Play that one more time.
Distinguished Chairman said there's no requirement that we have a vote, and so we, at this time we will not be having a vote.
I just want you to understand what she just came back from. They just got back from a two-week break, right? The purpose that she gave the Democratic caucus the marching orders on was to go out and sell impeachment to the voters. Now she's coming back and she's like, no, we're not taking a vote. Now, she hadn't taken a vote before they left. But friends, she's coming back even less timid about taking a vote now. This continues to be a sham. It's a non-impeachment. He's not going to be impeached. If they even draw up articles, I'll be somewhat shocked at this point. It's just a total continuation of something that they started during the campaign and that has continued forth to this very day. And someone who's documented a great deal of it now with not one, but two, what I predict will be New York Times bestselling books, is Greg Jarrett. You may know him from his fine work on Fox. He, of course, is a senior legal analyst and anchor for the news network. And usually when he and I get together, he's the one asking the questions. Well, today, Mr. Jarrett, we're turning the tables here. But congratulations on Witch Hunt, the story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history. Greg Jarrett, welcome back to Kevin McCullough Radio.
Kevin, great to be back with you. Thanks for having me.
So let me get your take on impeachment and we'll work our way back to your book. But did you have the same reaction that I did when Nancy made that kind of feeble little admission yesterday that she's not going to take a vote on whether or not impeachment should officially become an inquiry or not?
Well, absolutely. I had the same reaction. In fact, I immediately wrote a column. It's on FoxNews.com, in which I say the latest Pelosi Schiff impeachment witch hunt is really a venomous affront to constitutional principles. Mm. This is a star chamber that she and Adam Schiff have now contrived. The remaining members of the House are left in the dark. No access to facts, documents, testimony. President Trump, American voters who placed him in office have no idea what's going on behind closed doors. And, you know, as I write, what is the purpose of electoral choice by the many if it can be reversed by the secret maneuvers of the few, or in this case, the two, Pelosi and Schiff? This is anathema to due process, which is a cherished right.
Well said, Greg Jarrett, as usual. He writes with very precise, pungent precision in a way that really drives home the point, but also very much helps you understand exactly what the issue is here. And I think one of the things that, and I don't know where it goes at this point, Greg, you're the legal guy. I'm more the prognosticator of how human behavior interacts. It seems like that impeachment has peaked too early for them to really make any good use of it. And it seems like the presidential field is going nowhere. I really do believe that Trump is going to have a very good year next year, barring no disastrous economic or world calamity outbreak. But it almost didn't happen. And you document this in your two books, your first best-selling book, The Russia Hoax. You kind of started down the trail. But in Witch Hunt, and forgive me, I have not completed it. I just got my copy. You really delve into this sinister cabal. You call part of it a malignant force. You talk about the pernicious lies that they invented in order to be able to stop this guy. Greg, what you just said about impeachment sounds just like a continuation of the same strategy being recycled again and again.
Yeah, this is the newest version of the old Russia witch hunt. I guess we could call it the Ukrainian witch hunt. The first was ludicrous. This is twice as preposterous. And, you know, Americans are pretty smart. Most of them have taken a look at the transcript of the telephone conversation between Presidents Trump and Zelensky. And, you know, they have mostly reacted to say, well, what's the big deal here? And you know, the Department of Justice Criminal Division, these are the best prosecutors in our federal system, looked at the official record And they unanimously concluded no crime, no campaign finance violation. This is typical diplomacy. And, you know, if there's no crime or high crime and misdemeanor, on what basis do you really impeach the president? This amorphous concept of an abuse of power, which is nowhere in the Constitution and defies any fixed definition. And Americans realize that this is exactly what the framers feared, that an opposing party would seek to remove a president because they hate him or dislike his policies. But politics is not a basis for impeachment.
Well, isn't though that, Greg, and you're a lawyer, so again, I keep coming back to that because you know the law better than I would deign to even pretend. But high crimes and misdemeanors in the context of the Constitution isn't a legal term. This is a political process, right? So it's basically whatever they can get a majority in that body to say it is.
Well, its foundation is legal. And in fact, the founders struggled with a variety of different approaches, and they settled on that one because it was the closest to a general phrase, treason, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors, that mirrored the law. But it's true that legal scholars have spent, you know, the better part of two centuries debating the true meaning of it. And there are scholars who say, well, let's say that under certain circumstances, if you crane your neck just right and squint your eyes, we can say it's an abuse of power. But again, that's a very nebulous term. It risks being abused. And frankly, I blame Gerald Ford, not when he was president, but when, you know, he was a leader in the House. And in a conversation, he said, well, impeachment can mean anything the House wants it to mean on any given day. He was mangling the true intent and the commands of the impeachment clause in the Constitution and did great damage henceforth.
No, I agree. But we're dealing with people that are even less principled than Gerald Ford, in my opinion, now in the body of right. Nadler and Schiff and these guys. I mean, they literally will make stuff up. In fact, in the opening pages of this book, you actually indicate that you might believe that some of the Steele dossier wasn't even based on any type of source, that there's portions of it that sources might not exist on, that it might just be pure fiction that someone made up.
Oh, I think it is. You know, it's either paid for Russian disinformation that was originally commissioned by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC. That's a fact. It's documented. It's an admitted fact. And as I explain in the book, the hiring of Christopher Steele, this maladroit ex-British spy, to write this dossier, his first dossier, there are 17 memos that compose the full dossier, but his first one was written in the course of about 10 days. And if you read it, that's an impossibility. So it invites the question, it would take months working human sources and so forth. This is a guy who hadn't even been in Russia in more than a decade. It's as if he picked up the telephone, called the Kremlin, and they just fed him a bunch of disinformation, or he embellished or invented other things, you know, out of thin air.
Yeah.
And, you know, but one thing's for sure, the FBI spent, before the special counsel was ever appointed, spent 9 months creating a flow sheet trying to prove anything and everything in the dossier, and it ended up an empty flow sheet. They had nothing. They couldn't verify anything.
Well, that was one of the fundamental problems with it from the very beginning, and it's just one of the aspects that Greg highlights in his new book, which I, again, predict will be an instant bestseller, Witch Hunt, the story of the greatest mass delusion in American political history, following on the heels of his last bestseller, The Russia Hoax. Greg, I want to get into some of the major points of your book, because
sure.
it seems to me in the narrative of the way the timeline plays out, you've kind of got these different periods. So you have like the the malfeasance that went on during the campaign. And then you had the malfeasance that kind of happened once he was elected. And then once he, but before he was in office, then once he took office, it seems like it took another turn. And then ever since he's been in office, it seems like they've been trying to throw darts at him every which direction every single day. Where do you think the most important development of was it all one kind of mad plan from the beginning, or was this something that morphed and changed as he continued to have success?
Well, the Russia hoax was invented in order to stop Trump, the candidate, from getting elected. And it was sedulously disseminated to the media in hopes that they would run wild with it. There were media reports accusing Trump of being a Russian asset, but it really didn't gain traction and affect the election. Once voters put him into office, then, what I refer to as the malignant force, others call it the deep state, then they kicked it into overdrive. And they worked tirelessly to frame him for something he didn't do. And they convinced tens of millions of Americans that President Trump had committed the most noxious crime in America, treasonous conspiracy with Russia. And it was based on nothing. One of the things I am able to explain in the book is that those behind it, the principal players, when they were forced under oath to testify behind closed doors, admitted they never had any credible evidence to launch the investigation in July of 2016. And 9 months later, when the special counsel was appointed, they still had no evidence to justify the probe. So it was all based on a lie. And again, it was paid for by the Clinton campaign and the Democrats. What's amazing is the media paid no attention to what Hillary Clinton did, but devoted all of their scrutiny to what Trump did not do.
Yeah. Well, Greg, let's drill down on that for a second, because any reasonable person that even has heard some of the accusations from the impeachment, the non-impeachment inquiry that is underway, this is all about supposedly Trump and his forces and his cabal working with, foreign powers to affect an outcome in the first of all, it was in the election, and now in, Ukrainian policy and whatever. It's fill in the blank, Kavanaugh. Like there's all these things that they have said, with the worst motives always assumed, that the president and the president's side and his actions and his ultimate outcomes were always suspect because they were corrupt from the beginning. Yet not one ounce of attention is paid to the very things that the Democrats did that fulfilled a lot of those same checked boxes that were actual fact. Hillary and company working with Russian oligarchs to get information for the dossier, the funding of the dossier. There was actual contact with foreign powers, foreign intelligence officers in the form of Steele. I mean, why did our industry, the media, the news, the journalists of this country turn their back on the real story?
Two words, hatred and bias. In fact, I devote chapter 6, which is the second longest chapter in the book, entitled The Media Witch Hunt, to the actions of so many journalists. This is 54 pages filled with examples of how reporters routinely engaged in grossly reckless reporting. They committed repeated acts of media malpractice. They were so eager, Kevin, to accept as gospel these endless intelligence leaks that they assumed were accurate and truthful, but they never bothered to vet them. And they embraced the dossier as if it were scripture.
Right.
And so, reporters who were riven with bias and hatred for Trump were so easily exploited, and they became witting accessories to the witch hunt.
Well, it's certainly something that we saw play out. And I think the American people, when history has given us some perspective, will look back at Trump and say, man, look at what he accomplished, given that he faced this kind of well, in your term, malignant force. I've called them the deep state. But considering all that was poised against him, even in just term one, even if he doesn't get reelected, some 87 campaign promises kept and doing so in the daily dragon breath of this stuff coming at him. Let me ask you about the long term kind of impact that your book and the things that you're identifying in The Witch Hunt. Kimberly Strassel has just released a really good title as well from some of her documentation from the reporting of the last few years. But the kind of residual damage that's done to our institutions or to government, particularly given the fact that now evidently the plan of action is going to be try to tear the people down that we don't like in as dishonest right. and unfair a way during the campaign. And if that doesn't work, impeach them. Even if you don't have anything, you don't have to have a standard. There's no consistency here. Just go after them. Right. Have we lost what American the true miracle of American politics used to stand for?
Oh, I think we have, and it's a shame to see it happen. I mean, I think this is the worst scandal to hit the FBI in my lifetime. I'm 64, and it has also deeply blemished the Department of Justice and other institutions that we trust and rely on. I'll give you an example. Rod Rosenstein is certainly one of the villains in my book. It turns out, and I explain this in great detail, that he appointed Robert Mueller in an act of vengeance against Trump, not because the law or evidence merited a special counsel. And I explain how this happened. But when confronted over his abuse of power and ignoring with impunity the federal regulations on a special counsel, he cowers behind his desk and he blubbers, "Am I going to get fired?" And so we have this 22-month-long national nightmare, presidency held hostage, because a guy got mad and he decided he was going to retaliate against the president. And compounding all of this, Kevin, is Mueller knew, again, I explain this in my book, that there was no Russia collusion conspiracy. He knew it almost right away.
Right.
And there's a pivotal meeting a year before his report comes out, in which he admits it to Trump's lawyers, and an angry shouting match ensues with John Dowd, one of Trump's lawyers, pounding his fist on the table and yelling at Mueller. I mean, these are the stories that take you behind the scenes of what really happened.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to work my way through the full volume. And friends, it is a thick volume. In fact, I count, two big appendixes with little tiny footnotes. So Greg's done his homework here, and it's all backed up by facts and citations. And I think it'll be a good addition to your library, particularly if you're trying to understand what the president has been up against over the last 3 years. Greg Jarrett, always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks for letting me be the questioner on this go-around.
Yeah, Kevin, it is my great pleasure. Always fun talking to you. Thank you.
All right. Kevin McCullough, stay with us.